Thanks. So I wanted all of you to know that I am an entrepreneur. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. I started a one-man handyman business in Albuquerque in 1974, and in 1994 actually had 1,000 employees, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, pipe fitting. Really, the American dream come true. It was based on the simplest of notions. I always showed up on time, did what I said I would do, did a little bit more than what I said I would do for people, and the business grew. And in 1999, I sold that business. Nobody lost their job, and it's doing better than ever. I view my venture into politics as entrepreneurial. I had never been involved in politics prior to running for governor of New Mexico. I went and I introduced myself to the Republican Party a couple of weeks before I announced, and what they said was, hey, we like you, we like what you've got to say, but you need to know that you'll never get elected in a state that's 2-1 Democrat as governor. It's just not possible. Well, I got elected. And I'd like to think it was on the basis of what I had to say prior to the election, which was, look, this was going to be about issues first, politics last. It was going to be about best product, best service, lowest price. Everything was going to be a cost-benefit analysis. What are we spending, and what are we getting for what we're spending? I think more significant than getting elected was the fact that I got reelected. And I got reelected in a state that was 2-1 Democrat, and I got reelected, I think, on the basis of having way over-delivered on that first set of promises. There were some things that I was known for nationally. One was I vetoed 750 bills while I was governor of New Mexico. I had thousands of line item vetoes while I was governor of New Mexico. Now, putting that into context, that was like more than the other 49 governors in the country combined. Now, if you're thinking, well, gee, this is a no governor. This is somebody who says no to everything. I would argue that what I was looking at was public policy that was equal for everybody, as opposed to public policy that benefited individuals, groups, corporations that were well connected politically, as opposed to legislation that would affect everyone equally. And that's kind of the way that I viewed things. So I ended up vetoing billions of dollars worth of new spending in this context of let's spend money that everybody gets a benefit out of as opposed to just a few. Now, again, what I think is really significant is that I got reelected by a bigger margin than I got elected the first time in a state that was 2-1 Democrat with this notion. And I think people saw good stewardship of tax dollars. So it wasn't about saying no as much as it was, again, a government that functions for all of us. Another thing that I was known for nationally, really, I'm a free market guy. Best product, best service, lowest price. So when it came to education, I espoused bringing competition to public education. I espoused a school voucher system in New Mexico for 6 straight years that, in my opinion, bringing competition to public education would improve public education dramatically. Bringing educational entrepreneurs to bear on a system, in my opinion, would result in a better product, a better service at a lower price. Another thing that I was known for nationally, and it was in 1999, it was the start of my second term, I really wanted to take a hard look at the war on drugs, and I wanted to include legalization as a potential alternative to what we were currently doing. So when I started that out in 1999, right off the bat, I needed to look at Holland, of course, which according to the government had drug use that was skyrocketing and had violence and crime that was just off the charts. And it all had to do with drug use. Well, come to find out, Holland has 60% the drug use as that of the United States. That's on a per capita basis. That's marijuana, that's hard drugs, that's kids, and that's adults. Looking at this issue, after a very short amount of time, I came to the conclusion that 90% of the drug problem was prohibition-related, not use-related, And that is not to discount the problems with use and abuse, but that ought to be the focus. So I came at this from a cost-benefit analysis. Half of what we spend on law enforcement, half of what we spend on the courts, and half of what we spend on the prisons is drug-related. And to what end? Well, we're arresting 1.8 million people a year in this country on drug-related crime. We have four times the incarceration rate on a percentage basis of any country in the world. In second place is New Zealand. Four times. We have, 2.4 million people in this country incarcerated. Now, let me put a face to that. I was in Des Moines, Iowa, a couple of weeks ago, and I'm talking to this young man, who I'm going to guess was in his mid-30s. And he got arrested and charged. He was arrested for possession of a gram of marijuana. He was arrested and charged with the intent to distribute that gram of marijuana to his 17-year-old daughter. And he was sentenced to 25 years in prison. And he had just gotten out of prison, having served over 1 year in prison for that. So that's the face to this 1.8 million arrests. I figure there are 30 million convicted felons in this country that, but for our drug laws, would otherwise be taxpaying, law-abiding citizens. And if you want to count individuals that have just smoked pot and not been caught, I being one of those, there are 100 million Americans out there that, but for our drug laws, would otherwise be taxpaying, law-abiding citizens. So after examining this issue for a fairly short amount of time in 1999, I advocated the legalization of marijuana. Control it, regulate it, tax it. When it comes to all the other drugs, I advocate harm reduction strategies, which is basically looking at the problem as a health problem first, not as a criminal justice problem. Looking at it from the standpoint of the things that we really care about, reducing death, disease, crime, corruption. I got out of office January 1 of 2003. I was term limited. I am a firm believer in term limits. I'm a firm believer that we're all served by politicians that can't spend a whole lot of time in office. I think politicians do good things as a result of being limited in their time in office. But I find myself about 14 months ago being outraged over what's happening in this country. And I'm not laying blame on Obama. I'm not laying blame on Democrats, because Democrats and Republicans can share in just where we're at right now. But where we're at right now is we are bankrupt. We are bankrupt. 43 cents out of every dollar that we're spending right now is borrowed. And I think the system is really on a verge of collapse. And so spending needs to be slashed. How much? Well, 43% if you just want to balance revenues with expenditures. So when it comes to Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, these areas need to be reformed if they're going to be viable going into the future. They have to be. Our entire future depends on that. We have a $13 trillion deficit right now. We have $100 trillion in unfunded entitlement liabilities. Promises that were made that should have never been made. These issues have to be addressed. They have to be addressed now. And in my opinion, we're moving in the wrong direction. Spending is out of control. Taxes are going up across the board when we should be looking at slashing spending. When we should understand that by reducing taxes, we'll actually grow the economy by doing that. I'm a free market guy. I really believe in the free market. When it comes to education, again, I think unleashing educational entrepreneurs on a system with no competition would unbelievably improve education. Healthcare. Look, I think healthcare is about as far removed from free market as it possibly could be. And if we just had free market reforms, the government eliminating impediments for healthcare entrepreneurs that would want to enter into the system to deliver a better product, a better service at a lower price, would be enormous. And let me draw some examples. I had some stitches last year in Taos, 7 stitches on my forehead. There's no advertised pricing for stitches, so you go in and you get your stitches, and $750. And I just have a sense if there were advertised pricing for stitches, and if physician's assistants were able to get into the business of doing stitches, that I probably could have got that done in Albuquerque at a clinic specializing in stitches for $75 as opposed to $750. And I'd have put a Band-Aid on it and gotten in a car and driven down to Albuquerque. And when it comes to insurance, you know, what we have now is national health care insurance. I don't really want to buy that. I kind of want to pay as you go, but I want to buy insurance for catastrophic illness or injury. I think that it would be a lot less money. I had envisioned, when it came to health care reform, I had envisioned gallbladders are us. I'd envision clinics specializing in gallbladder surgery at thousands of dollars as opposed to tens of thousands of dollars. We're getting on airplanes right now to go to India to have heart surgery at tens of thousands as opposed to hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then a free market system when it comes to health care. Look, medical marijuana fits in that area. Marijuana, and I espouse legalizing marijuana, but legalized marijuana is a huge alternative to spending thousands of dollars on prescription drugs for an individual over a lifetime or tens of thousands of dollars as opposed to marijuana, which might make a huge difference. And let me draw an analogy with regard to the health insurance that we have right now in this country. Why don't we have grocery insurance? Really? What a great idea. We wouldn't have to pay for groceries. Groceries are essential to us living. So we could go into the grocery store, we'd have grocery insurance. There wouldn't be any prices on any of the counters because prices don't matter. We don't pay for the groceries. Grocery insurance does. Would we buy ground round or would we buy fillets? Would we pick up ground round or fillets? Well, we'd pick up fillets because we don't pay for it. Grocery insurance does. And we went up to the checkout stand. What about the grocery store owner? What about the prices? Well, he's jacked the prices up so high because nobody pays for groceries. Grocery insurance does. Well, I think that's what we've got right now in our healthcare system today. And I think it's going to result in just a whole lot more people being dropped on a system with no added capacity. In my opinion, it's going to raise costs significantly, and it's going to result in rationing. And then looking at costs in this country and looking at national defense. I am a strong believer in national defense. I think that the government has an obligation to provide for a strong national defense. But I would argue that our defense, that our security is not being threatened in either Iraq or Afghanistan. I would have been on record prior to us going into Iraq saying, you know what, we don't need to do this. We have the military surveillance capability to see Iraq roll out any weapons of mass destruction. We can go in and we can surgically address that situation militarily. I thought if we went into Iraq, we would find ourselves mired in a civil war to which there would be no end. Afghanistan, you know what? Originally, I thought that was completely warranted. I thought that was about a strike. It was a strike. Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda. But they're not there anymore, and we still are 10 years later. We're building roads, schools, bridges, highways, and hospitals in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we're borrowing 43 cents out of every dollar to do that. We're engaged in this process of nation building. Don't we have our own nation to build? Out of the dollar, out of the dollar that's being spent worldwide right now on military spending, 50 cents of that dollar is being spent by the United States, and we're 5% of the world's population. I think that all this stuff needs to be reassessed. We're part of treaties that were negotiated 70 years ago. Today is a new world reality, and that new world reality is we can't continue to pay for this because we're bankrupt, and we're going to be of no good to any country worldwide bankrupt. You know, another hot-button issue of the day right now is immigration. And immigration, I think that there are a couple of things that we could do that would dramatically improve the situation with immigration. One is legalize marijuana. Arguably, 75% of the border violence goes away as a result of legalizing marijuana. It's estimated that 75% of the Mexican drug cartel activity revolves around marijuana. Secondly, look, make it easy for immigrants that enter into this country that want to work to get a legal work visa. Just do that. Legal work visa. Social Security card, background check, pay taxes. We need to have immigration reform. Immigration reform needs to be about work, not welfare, and we can look to within our own country also. We need to, if we can, we need to work. We shouldn't be sitting at home collecting welfare checks. The notion of putting the National Guard arm in arm across 1,600 miles of border, the notion of building fences, I just think it would be a lot of money spent without any real benefit. Make it easy to get a work visa. And then, you know, I think I know something about this because I was a border governor. There was another border governor who actually knew something about this, who actually had all the right ideas when it came to immigration, and that was George Bush. And he just didn't get around to implementing what it was that should have been implemented. He talked about setting up a period. He called it amnesty. Amnesty is not about citizenship. Amnesty is about a grace period. I call it a grace period, whereby illegal immigrants can get a legal work visa. And those are the things that we care about. We don't want crime committed in this country. We want taxes paid. And we don't want it to be about welfare. We want it to be about a work. So in December of last year, I formed Our America Initiative. The idea was to try and put a voice to these issues that I think really are the issues of the day, that we do look at everything from a cost-benefit analysis, that we really can improve the world, that there's some optimism here, that there's an awareness right now that exists, that I think we can right the financial ship, that this country can be viable into the future, that all of us give up a little bit to have something as opposed to us losing everything, which is where it's at right now. The optimism is that we are recognizing this, and that the optimism is that we return to the notion of what this country has always been about, which is liberty and freedom and the personal responsibility that goes along with that. I wouldn't be here in front of you right now. I wouldn't be here in front of you right now if what I am saying is being said. I wouldn't be here right now if I didn't think that what I'm saying is important and needs to be said. There is no they that's going to come to our rescue out there. There's you, and there's me, and I really do think that we can make a difference. And I really want to thank all of you for your activism. I want to thank all of you for your activism on this issue, because once people connect this issue, then this notion of liberty and freedom and the personal responsibility that goes along with that transcends dozens of other issues, all for the betterment of this country. Thank you very much. Thank you.